My conviction after 40 years in this field is that the most important capacity any of us develop in our lives is our ability to influence behavior, either our own behavior or that of other people. And so learning to be thoughtful about it, you can't overinvest in that capacity.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. I'm a sucker for a weekend movie on the couch, especially a good throwback. I know it's not the finest of cinema, but do you remember The Wedding Singer of 1990s fame with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler? I love that one. Drew Barrymore was 22 in that film. But did you know that she had already been in and out of rehab several times by then? I wouldn't wish childhood fame on anyone. The good news is that Drew Barrymore is doing well these days. She's got her own talk show, she's sober, and she's completely given up alcohol. I know that's a pretty big example of change. And most of us are probably just looking at making smaller tweaks in our lives, like achieving that one goal, or improving that relationship, or changing that mindset, or not eating 36 mini peanut butter cups from Trader Joe's in one sitting. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just trying to avoid the resulting sugar coma. Now, whether our hopes are for big or small change, we'd all like to see that change happen like it did for Drew Barrymore. But so often we think that change comes down to willpower. If we just want it enough and grit our teeth hard enough, we'll make it happen. Well, my guest today will tell you that isn't the case, and that our struggle to change is often more a lack of skill than will. He'll tell you all about why we misunderstand change and what we can start doing to actually get some traction on our goals. Joseph Grenny is a four-time New York Times best-selling author. He co-authored a little book called Crucial Conversations, you may have heard of it, that has taken the professional world by storm. He's followed that up with several other books about influencing behavior, including one of my favorites called Change Anything. He's the co-founder of the Crucial Learning Company. Most recently, he's taken that expertise and applied it to some other amazing passion projects in his community. But I'll let him tell you about those. Here's Joseph Grenny.
I'm Joseph Grenny from Crucial Learning. I helped start a company 35 years ago that's committed to helping organizations improve and at the same time, hopefully helping people improve their quality of work life and quality of life. And that led inevitably to doing work with UNITAS, trying to help improve a lot of people in poverty and less developed countries all around the world. And that led inevitably to the Other Side Academy and today the Other Side Village. The Other Side Academy started in 2015. It's a 2.5-year minimum life skills free residential program for people with long histories of crime, addiction, and homelessness. So my wife and I and a group of colleagues started this 10 years ago so that those who are just caught in the middle of this system that they could never get out of would have a way of creating deep and lasting change. And we're working on building a village with about 600 people who've been chronically homeless, struggle with mental health, and helping them develop this place that's self-reliant, beautiful, safe, and where they can thrive. And it's been one of the most glorious things I've ever been involved with.
I'm just so curious about what led you to this particular career that encompasses so much, but is really centered on influencing behavior. How did you get into this?
You know, I think one thing that's true for a lot of us is that the specific suffering that we endure in our lives becomes generalized learning, that from the specific things that life visits on us, we develop capacities. And those of us that learn to be the happiest recognize those capacities are there for a reason, and they're for a reason to help us to minister to people that are in those exact circumstances, that those capacities are perfectly suited to serve. And that's been the story of my life. I grew up for a lot of reasons feeling small and powerless and disenfranchised, and I think that gave me a sensitivity to people that had it even more so. I grew up worrying about my safety, and that made me think about influence and how you can have an effect on your own environment. We had two boys that got into drugs and started in and out of jail, and that opened our minds to the struggle of bondage that so many people endure when they become subject to an addiction of different kinds, and also how the criminal justice system is perfectly designed to destroy lives. It has an important public safety mission, but the way it's carried out, frankly, makes it more likely people will be residents of the criminal justice system for the rest of their lives. And so all of those unique perspectives in our lives, I think, help my wife and I to be prepared to serve in different ways.
What an inspirational way to take that specific suffering that you talked about, but to use it to be outward focused is quite a remarkable thing. I'm wondering what the biggest misconception that we have about changing behavior is that you wish everyone knew.
I think one of the most damning misperceptions we have, and I mean damning in the technical sense of the word, is that we assume that it's all about how bad you want to change. And so, you know, we'll have people come and sit on our bench at the Other Side Academy that have been shooting heroin for 30 years, and how they got into that lifestyle is a whole tragedy story on its own. And most of us who haven't endured what they're experiencing, it's easy from the outside to say, when you hit rock bottom, then you'll change, right? Which essentially means if you want it too badly enough, then you'd kick heroin. Well, good heavens, you haven't really understood someone's life until you recognize all the sources of influence that conspire to keep us stuck in our bad habits. And if you doubt that at all, look at your own.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about just you, Lisa, but
no,
you know,
I'm looking at myself. Yeah. I'm not
all
exempt.
Of us have some vexing habit
yes.
that we've just had a hard time kicking. And the most important insight I've learned about influence and human change is that it's overdetermined, that there are lots of sources of influence that shape the way we behave. And unless you address all of those, you're unlikely to change.
That's amazing. Okay. I'm wondering if you would explain those six sources of influence.
Sure. Yeah. Source one, personal motivation, means that I get intrinsic pleasure from it. The most enlightening part of studying that one is realizing that there aren't some things you like and some things you don't like. How you think about things determines whether you like them and don't like them. And if you can change how you think about things, you can change what you like and don't like. You can come to hate the bad stuff and love the good stuff. You can love the bad stuff and hate the good stuff. You can do either. And so there's an enormous capacity we have if you're skilled in changing how people feel and their intrinsic motivation. The next is personal ability. So that's the skills I've got. Social motivation. How do the people around me affect whether I want to or whether I can do the right thing or the wrong thing? Social ability. How do the people around me either enable or disable me from doing certain behaviors? Just an aside on this, the average person at the Other Side Academy, the Other Side Village, when I ask them, how much money would you have had to have in your pocket for you to have not come to the academy to give up drugs and crime? How much money would you have had to have? Most of us will be stunned to realize that the average response is $10. If they'd had $10, whatever crisis they were facing, they would have kicked it down the road one more day because I can get high one more time and I'll stay on the street. So when you hand that $10 or $20 to somebody, you have to ask, am I enabling or disabling? What am I doing? Am I helping them towards positive change, or am I actually perhaps helping them stay on the street one more day? Social ability is a huge factor. Structural motivation is a big deal. The things that reward or punish us. So are the costs high when I do things, or are the costs low? And finally, structural ability, which is the physical environment I'm in. So what kind of a place? Is it a clean place or a dirty place? Is there a picture of porn on the wall? Is there a picture of a temple on the wall? So what kind of physical space around me affects my personal choices? All six of those 80 years of social science show they shape us. And the question at the end of the day is, are they shaping you in the way you want to go or the way you don't want to go? So here's the one sentence summary of 35 years of my research. If you want to take control of your behavior, you have to take control of the things that control you. And all six of these sources of influence control us. They shape us. They influence us. And so if you don't take active control of them to have them support the change you're trying to create, you're going to fail.
Let me quickly say that I have had the privilege of visiting the Other Side Academy and visiting with some of the residents there. Hearing their stories of change is so inspiring. If you want to hear some of those stories, be sure to listen to the first episode of our Doing Good Better series. Now, I'm going to repeat those six sources of influence that Joseph just talked about because I know that they went by fast. There are two main categories of influence, and those are motivation and ability. There are three divisions in each of those categories. So you have personal motivation and personal ability. Then you have social motivation and social ability. And finally, there are structural motivation and structural ability. Joseph said this is what those sources of influence might look like in real life.
let's look at a bad habit. So let's say that I spend impulsively and I'm not saving enough for retirement. And I mean, look at my hair, for crying out loud. I'm not too far away from this. Got one foot in the grave.
I need to
be thinking about my future, but I'm not. I'm spending for the present. So most of us would look at that and say, this is just a willpower problem. Well, it turns out the whole other side that we never examine is at least as important. That's the ability side. Oftentimes, we lack the ability to behave differently, or all of our current abilities are perfectly suited to our current behavior. So I'm really good at finding ways of distracting myself from boredom by finding places, shopping sites that I really enjoy looking at. And I bookmarked all of them. So I have bookmarks, which is a structural ability. I've got friends that I talk to about things that make recommendations to me. That's a social ability. My personal abilities are finally honed to being able to use my time to go look for interesting things to purchase. So I've got lots and lots and lots of skills there. What I don't have is all of the ability components that would help me to resist, to distract, to defer, to manage my emotions differently. I don't have any of that stuff. So if I don't have those skills and I do have the others, guess how I'm going to behave? So the issue here is skill and ability is often a massive part of this. If I just quickly reference now the Other Side Academy as well.
Please.
If I've been shooting heroin for 30 years, I've been in and out of incarceration over and over, guess what kind of skills I've developed? I know how to weigh my dope. I know where to buy it. I know how to make sure that it's pure. I know how to load a syringe. I know how to hide it from the cops. I know all sorts of things. What I don't know is how to get through a day without it, how to hold a job, how to solve problems with other human beings. So if I've got one set of skills but not the others, guess how I'm going to behave even if I hit rock bottom?
Joseph will tell you all six of these sources influence our behavior, but there is one that we tend to underestimate more than the others.
But one that's often overlooked is what we call structural ability. That is the physical environment I'm in. So a lot of people would prefer to eat better, eat differently. I got to tell you, I've worked on this myself, and the most important intervention was eating off smaller plates, putting the bad stuff a little further at the table and keeping the good stuff a little closer. So put the giant broccoli serving bowl right in front of you so that seconds are easy. But the scalloped potatoes with, 8 pounds of cheese on them, leave those in the kitchen on the counter. And just those little distance manipulations make an enormous difference in what we eat. A good friend of mine is the world's foremost scholar on eating behavior. He found that if you have the dessert leftovers in your refrigerator in a bowl with a clear top, the likelihood of your eating it goes up about 2 times over if it has an opaque top. And so just these tiny little things.
Wow.
But once again, what you and I tend to tell ourselves is, well, I should be strong enough that it doesn't matter how big my plate is, how big my spoon. You're not. You're just not. 80 years of social science shows us all six of these sources of influence are consequential. And if you don't get them working for you, they are working against you. I just saw a statistic that said that for the first time in history, we've got a lot more people who are obese in the third world than we do who are undernourished in the third world.
Oh, wow.
The problems are flipping. And so this epidemic of obesity is traveling across the planet. Is this because the human species has changed? No. It's because our access to unhealthy options has changed. So it's a structural change that has brought this about. It's not because we're bad people. It's not because we're incapable of managing our diets. It's because a source of influence is different than it used to be. Therefore, if we flip that source of influence back in the direction it used to be, things would probably be different.
It makes sense that personal motivation and personal ability affect our decision-making, but I didn't realize that structure had such an impact on us. The fact that Trader Joe's is only a few minutes from my house and that it falls on one of my main travel routes may not be helping my peanut butter cup problem. That's structural influence. But another source of influence that has had just as much impact on us, if not more, is social influence.
If you think about it, I mean, even if you look at the Bible and look at stories of people in the Bible that God took an interest in that went through an enormous amount of change, from Adam and Eve to Abraham and Sarah to Moses and Zipporah and to apostles that Jesus chooses, all of them. Number one, a big part of the change was social. So with Moses, he brings Aaron into his life. He brings Jethro, his father-in-law, into his life. With the disciples, he creates a community. They've got a peer and a support group. They're close to Jesus a lot and so forth. So even in the scriptures, we find evidence that for people to change, it doesn't just take a burning bush and someone saying you really ought to do something different. What it takes is a different social system. When God takes an interest in Joseph, who's sold into Egypt and has this tutorial experience in prison for many years, he brings people into his life that mentor him, Pharaoh and others in the court, and he has these developmental experiences. When we were doing our research for a book I co-authored called Change Anything, I remember visiting with this woman who had overcome a 20-year smoking habit, 2 packs a day, and she was a respiratory therapist.
No way.
She says,
wow,
that the moment for her came when she had a code call. She was supposed to go to the 4th floor of her hospital, which meant don't use the elevator, you have to use the stairs. She got 2 flights up and couldn't breathe. And she said, good heavens, somebody may lose their life because I'm smoking so much that I can't even make it up 4 flights of stairs. So she doubled down and said, I'm going to change. When I asked her what helped, she said one of the things she had to do was spend less time with dad. She said even her phone conversations, he'd be puffing on one end, she'd be puffing on the other. It was a social experience. There was this bonding and connecting around smoking for them. If you want to change how you are, you have to change the number of friends and accomplices you have around you. Friends are people who help you. Accomplices are people who help you get into trouble. And so if you want to behave differently, you're going to need to have more friends and less accomplices. And our research shows if you just have a couple fewer accomplices and a couple more friends, the likelihood of change goes up about 40%.
Wow, that's significant.
And here's our problem, Lisa. Most of us think this is a cop-out. Most of us think, well, if I say I have to change my friends in order to be able to change, it's kind of like me blaming them. No, it's not. All it is you admitting you're a human being, and human beings are socially shaped. We're affected by the people, or you don't get to vote on this. This is why when God wants to change a group of people, he usually tells them to move. He says, go to a different place, get around a new group of people. He brings others into their lives. So this is how it works.
Human beings impact human beings. It's science. And I love Joseph's take on it. The idea that if God wants something different for people, he often uses the power of social influence to do that by bringing new people into their lives. I've heard that you are the sum of the 5 closest people to you. And that's because the people we rub shoulders with influence our outcomes. But our social circles impact far more than that.
So when we see with the current political divide and, you know, awful things going on around that, the way we look at each other is, you think that because you're bad. And you think the same thing about me. We have this simplistic lens about why people behave or think the way they do. And having 6 different explanations for why people think the way they do changes the way you see others. Learning to recognize it's not just about your motives, it's about your ability, it's about your social environment and background, it's about the incentives you're subject to, it's about the physical environment you inhabit. When I start seeing things that way, it fills me with patience and grace, and it enhances my capacity to influence others positively as well. If the world learned to think in more nuanced forms about one another, we'd be a different planet.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. When you take a look at the stress of our current political and social environment, which one of the sources of influence do you feel like is often neglected?
I think that we are grossly underappreciative of the degree to which social influence and structural influence make a difference. A friend of mine did a study years ago. There was a very contentious election going on at the time. And so in Washington, D.C., they randomly decided to give a free subscription to 1 of 2 newspapers to different homes in different neighborhoods. And then they tried to track whether voting patterns changed because of the newspaper that was dropped on their porch.
Interesting.
There was an 11% shift in voting patterns just based on whether they got the conservative newspaper or the more liberal newspaper. The data stream we're exposed to, if I'm watching Fox News versus MSNBC, just sitting and listening to that shapes the way you see the world. People think that they know where all the conflicts are in the world. No, there are probably about 25 open wars going on right now, and you know about 2 of them, Ukraine and Gaza, because those are the ones that are presented to us all the time. We think we see the world as it is. We don't. We see it as the sources of influence we're subject to shape us to do. And so I think the fact that each of us are in different physical structural environments and are surrounded by different social environments, we're naive about the degree to which that's shaping us versus us figuring out who we are as human beings. I think what's important If all of us could arrive at a place of humility to recognize that we are shaped in ways that we can become more conscious of, if we could just learn to be more aware of all of the things that are influencing us, then I think we would be in a greater sense of control of our own destiny. For example, it's common parlance now to talk about how once you're on the internet and cookies accumulate over time, you get served up information that those who have self-interest believe will entice you to give them your attention.
Yes.
That's how it works.
Yep.
So we get these reinforcing cycles with our experience online. If you're not conscious of that, and if you don't take active measures to contradict that, to seek out different sources of information, to go places where the internet doesn't want you to go or isn't trying to reward you for going, if you don't do that, you're not in control of your life. And so I'm hoping that some of our current conversation is making us more conscious of that so that we can be what some refer to as autotelic, choosing our own direction and purpose and not being shaped by these forces of self-interest.
Autotelic, I like that.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
It doesn't even have to be with just media and news, but just going to somebody else's tribe and visiting it. And us going and visiting other tribes and seeing other ways of doing things really expands our horizon. We have to do that. If not, we're not in control of our destiny.
Oh, I love it because it is so connected to our own identity. We think we operate in these vacuums that we're just determining our own fate by what we think and decide, and we are not. We are more influenced by each other than we really realize on so many levels.
There it is. You're my co-author now.
In terms of social influence, we can definitely limit each other's thinking, but we can also expand it too. And that's especially important to me as a mother of my own little tribe. I want my kids to be happy and successful and outward focused and live good lives. That's why I turned to Joseph for some input here on how to use my influence as a parent. Let me tell you, his first piece of advice was not what I expected. I'm particularly concerned about like how parents can effectively support their children without this nagging, shaming, you know, straining the relationship, asking for a friend who is trying to parent adult children. I'll be honest.
Pass it along to your friend.
Yes, please. Yeah, I'll tell him or her, whatever.
I mentioned at the beginning that we're building this place called the Other Side Village.
Yes.
This is for folks who've been chronically homeless. They lived an average of 9 years on the streets, struggling with mental health challenges, addiction, and every other manner of horror. And one of the things we knew is that the very physical design of the community would shape its destiny. And so we build these homes in a circle. And the porches all face inward, and there's a park at the center. So that when I come out in the morning, the tendency that I often have if I've been homeless for a long time is isolation, because isolation is protection, it's safety.
Yeah.
In the village, we need the opposite. And so when I come out with my cup of coffee on the porch in the morning, I'm going to see you on your porch with your cup of coffee, and we can't not connect. The design of the community can shape the behavior you want. One of the most potent sources of influence for parents that we grossly underestimate is just the design of the home. We complain that our kids aren't doing their homework. Well, look at the design of the home. All of the most comfortable places to sit are organized around a television. They're organized around passive media. And then we wonder why everybody's involved with passive media. Mm. What we don't have is comfortable places to read or to study. Our conversations, social conversations at the dinner table, are they about the last Netflix episode that we watched? Or are they about a book that we're reading? There are lots of just subtle things we can do to try to encourage people in positive directions naturally without guilt and without lectures. And if we designed our homes and if we thought about our social influence in a more intentional way, I think there's a lot more that we can do without the nagging.
Interior design changes lives. You heard it here, folks. And as a woman who's had an entire main floor of my home remodeled several years ago to accommodate my late husband's mobility and health needs, I can tell you that just changing the arrangement of our home had a huge influence on how my family interacted. It was interesting to have the kitchen and living room area set up for Chris and his equipment so he could be perfectly placed to have more interactions and meaningful moments with our kids. The arrangement of the furniture in our home made a huge difference. I had no idea. Joseph says another way we can influence our kids is not by delivering a perfectly timed and brilliantly worded speech, a skill which I have unsuccessfully been trying to master for the past 27 years,
Please see my 2018 speech about TikTok abstinence and its benefits to growing brains. Instead, Joseph says that one of the best ways we can help influence our kids is to just listen for the abilities they need help with.
I remember an episode in my son's life. He had gotten caught with a bunch of friends throwing water balloons at cars in the dark. And terrible, terrible, terrible thing to do. For them, it was this mischievous, playful thing, but of course, a terrible, awful thing for them to be doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I picked him up from the police station because they'd been detained there and was driving home.
Oh, man.
And my inclination was the lecture, the punishment, that, you know, I got to make sure he's motivated to never do this again. Mm. I stifled that impulse for a while and just drove quietly trying to collect my thoughts and realize this is an influence moment.
Yeah.
When finally he broke the silence by saying, "Dad, I know I shouldn't have done that. I know I shouldn't have done that, and I'm sorry." And he said, "But when they started filling the water balloons, I didn't know what to say." Now, here's the moment. Because if you don't have all six of these sources of influence in front of you, you won't even hear what he just said to you. What we'd hear from him is exactly what we thought we wanted to hear, which is, "Oh, you just are gutless. You had no courage. You couldn't stand up for the truth. This was a motivation problem." That's not what he just said. He said this was an ability problem. He said, "I didn't know what to say." And if we don't have this model in our heads, we'll miss this entire opportunity to deal with the ability problem. So I pulled the car over and I said, "Hey, Hiram, you're in luck." I said, "I am one of the world's leading experts in crucial conversations. And you have me in the car with you right now."
Your luck just changed. You're yes. Welcome. I'm here.
Yeah. He rolled his eyes. He wasn't particularly impressed. But that was a mentoring moment.
Yeah.
And while he still had to endure consequences and he did things he had to deal with, we had an opportunity to talk about how do you deal with a moment like that when it's tough to confront the crowd and to go against the reigning norm. That was an ability problem, not a motivation problem. There's a lot more we can do as parents if we learn to recognize there are many sources of influence besides just verbal persuasion, besides that clever lecture or clever wit that we want to drop on someone that we assume will cause them to pivot.
I can speak from experience that all my clever lectures have resulted in very few pivots from my kids. And that's okay, because that's not where we need to put our efforts as parents. Instead, it's paying attention to the sources of influence that are impacting our kids and the abilities that they might need help developing so that they can succeed in being who they want to be. Joseph says the first step on the path to success for our kids and for all of us, it's all about learning to be a scientist and a subject.
If the idea is that there's a threshold effect, that out of all the six sources of influence, when you get to the point where more are supporting change than are inhibiting change, then you'll change, then what you can do is become both the scientist and the subject. You're not just the lab rat running the maze, you're also the scientist designing the maze. So take responsibility for the design of the maze. Be the scientist as well as the subject. Just do experiments on yourself. Ask yourself, of the sources of influence which I can change, which are fairly easy to do, like, for example, just manipulating the size of your plate or the location of some of the different foods in your house. Just try that. Try a little experiment and see how you respond. And if you respond better and you like the results, it's going to encourage you to do more of it. The idea here with the friends thing isn't to just never see any of the people that you love again. It's maybe try just bringing another influence into your life. Bring a friend into it. Say, have a walking partner. Have somebody you check in with. Have somebody you high-five and share goals with. Add that in. See if things get a little better. And what happens over time is you build this sense of efficacy that I can succeed. I can change. And that will encourage you to continue to try to move more of the sources of influence in a positive direction. If you want to look online, look up these six sources of influence and learn a little bit about them, just pick one. And make a little tweak in your life and see if that nudges you in a different direction. And if it does, follow that rabbit. You know, keep trying little experiments like that. Think of yourself as the most important science experiment you'll ever do. And do things that help shape you in different ways. God intervenes in all six of these ways all the time. So why shouldn't we do the same? There are multiple sources of influence. And it isn't just about how bad you want it. And that we can do little experiments on ourselves. I hope that gives us a sense of life as a continuum rather than an either or. You're either done or you're not. And so I hope this gives people encouragement that this is an important area of study. It is a capacity you can never be too good at. And it's the essence of what makes our life work.
Well said. I love that. When someone feels that they have really given it their best effort and they've tried some of these things but feel like they have failed, what would you say to them?
I think the most important message of all of our work on influence is this message cautioning about toxic shame. That if we believe that willpower alone is the predictor of my capacity to become this fully realized human being, then when I fail, then it's obviously a deficit in me. It's not just a deficit in the environment that I inhabit. And we are saying you should take responsibility for your environment as much as you can, but you can't control it all. You can influence some of it. You can negotiate about some of it. But I would suggest that you give yourself a little grace. And one of the best ways to do that is to walk through all six of these sources of influence and identify how they're all affecting you and how many are within your circle of influence and how many are not. And I think seeing that picture more fully helps you to be a little more patient with the process and also a little bit more empowered and directed as you take charge. My conviction after 40 years in this field is that the most important capacity any of us develop in our lives is our ability to influence behavior, either our own behavior or that of other people. And so learning to be thoughtful about it, you can't overinvest in that capacity.
Change can feel daunting and hard and, quite frankly, out of reach. We hear stories about recovering addicts turning their lives around, but it's hard to see how that could ever be us, especially when we've been struggling with the same problem for a long time. But what Joseph Grenny helped me realize is this: change isn't just about increasing our motivation and hard work. Change is about looking at everything that is influencing our decision-making, and that includes social motivation and ability, and structural motivation and ability, in addition to personal motivation and ability. It may turn out that all we need to do is make a few tweaks to our social circles or environmental structures to see change happen. And if it doesn't, we go back to those six sources of influence and look at what else we can shift. Change isn't about willpower. It's about having the power to see what's influencing us and what we can do about it. It may take some risk, some humility, and even creativity to navigate the six sources of influence in new ways, but we can do it, and we should, because we are the best experiment we'll ever invest in.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price, with help from Becca Hurley Lung, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thanks to today's guest, Joseph Grenny. A link to his books, as well as his website, will be in the show notes. Don't miss out on two other great podcasts from the Lisa Show family, The Council of Moms and Proofread, a new book review podcast to help you read more of what you love. You can find The Council of Moms and Proofread on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thanks for listening.
I want to recommend another BYU Radio podcast you're going to love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new, and it has video as well as audio. So if you're someone who wants to engage with others on important topics but aren't sure how, or maybe you're burned out on social media and wish you could bring some humanity back into the discussions online or in real life, then Uncomfy is just for you. You'll hear stories of real people in challenging moments who chose to stick with the discomfort. And in the process, they healed their communities or learned to talk about what really matters to them or simply started to view others with more empathy. Isn't that what we all need? You can do it too. New episodes of Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, drop every Wednesday. And you can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.